Sandra and Noah.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Theater World Podcast. I'm Noah.
And I'm Sandra. And we have today the fabulous Ashley Chu.
Yes. Hello, hi. Ashley. coming at us live.
Hi, guys.
Coming at us live. Yes, you. Let us give you a little intro. We know you from Foster City, from doing shows at the Hill Barn. We did high school theater together at San Mateo High School. But now you are starring in the brand new jukebox musical Once Upon a One More Time, around the music of the one, the only Britney Spears.
Ah, hi guys.
All right.
So, tell us a little bit about your show, the musical that you're in, and maybe the premise. I heard that it is kind of like a Into the Woods meets Mamma Mia kind of show.
It's so funny because my boyfriend came to see it, and there was two like 13-year-old girls right behind him who said it's like Into the Woods meets Six, and ever since he overheard that, people have started saying that on the chat boards, but like my boyfriend was the original OG who heard it. It was so funny.
He was there first.
He was there first. The show, what is the premise of the show? The show is a bunch of princesses and fairy tale characters live in like fairy tale land, and they tell the story of their story, Sleeping Beauty, Cinderella, Snow White, Princess and the Pea, Rapunzel. They all tell their story every time their story is read anywhere in the world by a child. And they've been doing this for 500 years. They just keep telling the same story over and over again. They fall in love with the prince, the end. And one day Cinderella is like, there's got to be something more to life. And she wishes for something more. And the original fairy godmother, notorious OFG, appears out of nowhere, not her normal fairy godmother.
Is it really called the notorious OFG?
Yeah, there's a lot of jokes.
That's awesome.
The original. notorious OFG. So she appears, and Brooke Dillman, who's on Bob's Burgers, is our notorious OFG. She's awesome. And notorious OFG gives her The Feminine Mystique, which was a book by Betty Friedan that ignited one of the earlier waves of feminism and basically told women that you could be more than a housewife. And there's more to life. So then the princesses all read it, discover there's more to life, and by the end of Act One, they go on strike.
Whoa.
So, they're realizing, I don't have to be tied to my story. I don't have to be burdened by what people expect me to do. And I can dance like nobody's watching and take agency for myself. And yes. You know,
and save the prince this time. Or maybe not. I'm not sure.
And save the prince. Well, the prince, it's a contentious situation. They find out there's one prince, and he is everyone's prince. Oh. He's Prince Charming. He's Prince Faithful. He's Prince, like, you know, he's Snow White's prince, Sleeping Beauty's prince, the Princess and the Pea's prince.
So he's the F-boy, so right? He's the one that sees every single girl.
Yeah.
How exciting.
Exactly. Yeah. So the whole thing is like throughout the show, the Little Mermaid can't speak. She's in the stage of the mermaid story where she gave up her voice.
Mm-hmm.
And so a big theme throughout the show is like, never give up your voice. Use the power of your voice to tell your own story the way you want it to be told. And, you know, your voice is your superpower.
Well, that's nice for young girls to hear, that it's different than being rescued by the prince or being saved by the prince. It seems like that it's teaching females to find their own, their own destiny, or it's in their hands, and they don't have to rely on anyone else because it's inside themselves.
Exactly. I mean, they keep saying like new fairy tales for a new age, and it's just, these are the stories that my generation grew up with, every generation before me grew up with. So it's really nice that we're finally at a place where we can say, well, look at the stories we're being told and we're consuming. And is that the best thing for young people with agency and intellect to be hearing? Is this the way we should be modeling our lives? Like, do we want to be Cinderella, who's just so hopelessly, abused by her family, and then in love with a prince and then happy ever after, but they really just met and what do they really know about each other? And that's sort of like starting to happen at the beginning of our show is Cinderella's like, I feel like we should get to know each other more, Prince Charming. Like, you should come hang out with me and my friends. And he's like, no, I don't think we need to. I think Australia is all you need.
Yeah, he's a great dancer. So that's all you need to know, right?
Yeah, it seems like it's definitely the right time to re-examine these sort of iconic fairy tales that have been they've been kind of canonized in a way where we kind of just look at how beautiful they are and don't necessarily question the real messages of what they're teaching, because of course these stories were written originally hundreds of years ago and then kind of given new life by Disney or whoever and kind of glossified, but in the context of a world where, you know, 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, where the ideas of traditional femininity have kind of evolved past how they were kind of venerated back then.
Exactly. I think that's a great way to put it.
What character do you play in the show?
So I play Sleeping Beauty, and I'm in... The whole thing revolves around Cinderella has a scroll club because they don't have books, they have scrolls.
Yeah. Does it like, you so just like roll
when
it out?
When OF... Yeah, exactly. There's a moment, there's a joke where it's like, okay, let's read the book. And everyone's just like rolling up.
That's
this
exactly what I see in
like,
my mind.
Oh my God,
I'm
like... it's like, oh my God, what is this? This is terrible. You know, there's got to be a better way to do things than the way that they've been told how to do things, right? And so the first book they get is The Feminine Mystique, and they're like holding it up like, what is this thing? And I don't know how to read it. And yeah,
critical theory.
I know. And you watch them go from sort of like helpless women to fully empowered women. You know, it's as much of an arc as you can have in a jukebox musical. And so I play Sleeping Beauty, and we're in this, we call it scroll club because it's not a book, it's a scroll, of the girls that sit together and read their stories. You know, like they want to spend time with each other because they do the same thing all day in and out, is telling their stories. So they, as a group of people who have separate stories, one of their friends, so they sit there and read their stories from the Great Scroll together, like every waxing gibbous moon once a month. And there's like Snow White is in the club, Cinderella's in the club, Rapunzel's in the club, The Princess and the Pea is in the club, and The Little Mermaid is in the club. And Belle used to be in the club, but then they realized that Belle already
yeah, she's the most bookish one.
An idea of what books are, and she was problematic.
Oh. Is she like so a little like,
oh, you think you're better than us?
She's like a kind of like an explanatory person.
Well, she was too problematic, so they wrote her out of the book club. But her, sorry. I think, iterations as well was in
so
it.
What was your connection to Sleeping Beauty before this? Because I assume you grew up with all these stories. And how has it kind of recontextualized everything by portraying this character?
I grew up with Sleeping Beauty, and I remember that was actually one of the only... princess movies I couldn't get through because it
scared peril.
Me so much. And I just remember because I watched it again. Yeah. There's a lot of peril and there's a lot of green, yeah, which was really scary, I think, as a yeah child, because there's like flames that are green. And then they have the whole queen's army is like, there's like the pig and the wart and the warthog or something.
Yeah,
and
it's very
like
dark.
It's dark. And so I actually remember not being able to finish it as a kid, like being really scared and not finishing it. So when I saw it again a couple of years ago, once I got cast in it, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I ever actually finished seeing this part. Or there's a part where I maybe like ran away when I was watching the movie, like couldn't watch certain parts of it. So it starts there where it's like, you're a child and you're so terrified of the idea of evil, and then you also aspire to be this beautiful woman who was blonde. That was something I was worried about. I was like, am I just going to be I was worried I was going to be blonde because it was not authentic.
You've done blonde, you legally blonde.
And you've already done that before. You were Elle Woods, right?
Yeah, but you know, I didn't want to be like a version of a princess.
Yeah, you didn't need to be recreating the movie.
She was princess. It was like right. Canonically. Right. So she's, you know, aspirationally blonde in a way that like a young Asian girl will grow up, and like I have friends who like aspire to look like mm-hmm. what we know princesses mm-hmm. look like, and which, you know, is not something that reflects who I am in the world. So from that journey to now being that princess, and I walked into my wig fitting, I said, what color is my hair going to be? That was kind of like my first concern, my first fitting, where I had first contact with like actually working on the show. And they were like, what do you mean your own? It's going to be your own hair color. And I just remember being like blown away. Because it was like, oh, right. This is Ashley Chu's Sleeping Beauty. This is not like Disney's Sleeping Beauty. So that's where it started, and that's where it's going now. And it's just, it's really cool. Because now I have this beautiful costume. I have gummy bears on my socks. My hair looks like my own hair. I'm wearing this beautiful handmade tutu, and I'm twirling all over the place. Like, I'm doing all this fun stuff. And it's like my version of Sleeping Beauty, which I just think is a big deal because...
And Sleeping Beauty is a great story, you know, it doesn't say in the book, the storybook, she looks like this, she looks like that, you know, like, so having someone else play something like, you know, Sleeping Beauty gives it more depth and more like anyone can be Sleeping Beauty. You know, this story is anyone's story.
Exactly. It's the story of anyone who hasn't been able to tell their story before.
It's an interesting dynamic because you're, you know, pretty much originating this role, but it's a, you know, iconic canonical character with that has so much of a story and history attached to it. But yeah, you're getting to make it your own and revitalize it in the way that it seems like is the whole message of the show, which is taking control of your own story and making it your own and sort of taking in the princess stories as they apply to you personally.
Yeah. Do you have like a character Bible that you're like writing your character down in, or how are you creating this character?
I guess it's like a lot of the scenes are written and we're just riffing off each other like comedically. At least most of Act One is sort of that way. And so it's just comedy that's been written and then bits that we're kind of playing. And it's more based on our chemistry as a group of actors than it is like me coming in and being like, this is what I want to do for Sleeping Beauty, because these are just versions of ourselves. Like, that's what I've found as I go through a career in acting is like my teacher was like, you know, everyone tells you to go in the room and just be yourself. And I don't know about you, but I have 90 versions of myself. And so there's just a version of myself that's a little more like anxious and funny and excitable. And that's like sort of the Sleeping Beauty version. So it's nothing like a huge departure from Ashley Chu. But, you know, the character is just what the other girls in the room are bringing out in me and how our chemistry is together.
That sounds really exciting because it's a lot more liberating than being in, say, like a Disney show. Like if you were in Frozen or something where there's so much kind of rigidity to how people expect those characters to be. The whole point of Once Upon a One More Time is the reinvention of it all.
Yeah, it's not like the Disney experience at all.
Right.
From what I hear of the Disney experience.
They probably tell you like that you have to be this way, you have to say this thing, you have to look a certain way. I mean, anyone can be Elsa, but you have to wear the Elsa wig and you're inventing Sleeping Beauty and you're looking like yourself and you're feeling like yourself too.
Yeah, and just to that point, like we've relied on our swings a lot in our DC run because COVID and because we always need more understudies. And one of our swings has a slightly different hair color than the girl who plays Snow White. And when she went on for Snow White, she had her own set of wigs that were highlighted in the way that her own natural hair was highlighted, which
That's
was
amazing.
Awesome. It's just like every everybody's version of their character is their version. There's no like do exactly what this other person is doing or do what this person before you did. It's awesome.
So let's talk about the music. I mean, this show is not a traditional jukebox musical. It's not like a, you know, the bio musical going through the life of Britney. What has Britney Spears meant to you growing up?
When I was a kid, I was obsessed with this thing called hit clips. Do you remember hit clips at all?
Were they like the little things that you like put in a little thingamabobber? Okay. Maybe not.
Yeah, it was okay. It was one clip. Yeah, it was one clip and you would put it on your hip, I think. Was it hip clips?
I guess it's because it's called a hip clip, right?
But it's because you're so hip.
Is it hit or hip?
Ooh.
Either way, it was like you would put it on your low-rise jeans and you would like clip it on, and then you would have this tiny little square, which was like the chip of music, and you would go to Toys R Us and you would buy the chip of music, and they had all the hottest artists, and I would bargain with my life to all the kids around me who had Britney Spears ones, and I had like maybe two or three, and I'd be like, please, I'll give you my Justin Timberlake for your Britney Spears. And like I had these little hit clips of, you know, it's like 30 seconds of a song that you hit play, and it had one earphone connected via wire to the hit clip, and you would hit the button on the hit clip and you would hear the 30 seconds. So I had only Britney Spears hit clip songs. I listened to them over and over again, and I would just dance to them. And when I got cast in the show, my dad tried to look for it. We couldn't find it, but he found like a Barbie on eBay, which he thinks is similar to a Barbie I had that was like the Britney Spears Barbie. I mean, I loved her growing up. She was so cool. She was like the hottest thing. I was young, but she was doing like Baby One More Time, and I remember her just being it, like the celebrity.
Yeah, the like early mid-2000s.
Yeah, she was everywhere.
It was so cool.
It seemed like she came out and then like, you know, Christina Aguilera and then everyone else kind of followed its suit, you know? Like she was kind of like the standard back in the day.
She was the standard. She just like danced so much. I think that's part of her appeal to me anyways, was that she was dancing, and of course all of the sexual nuance of like Baby One More Time and things like that just flew right over my head. So I loved the dance scene, and I thought she was relatable as a schoolgirl instead of
she's at school, she's having fun
as a kid, but
to each their own. Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Sure,
she loves
sure.
school.
I mean, I was a kid, so that's what I thought, and I was like, she's just like me, and I would dance, you know, like that, and run around and sing, and, you know, that's the first pop star that I remember, and that I was, like, focused in on.
What's your, like, big song in the show? Do you sing Toxic? Do you sing Hit Me Baby One More Time? Like, what's your, like, big Britney moment in the show, or can you not share that?
Or like the show? Well, the show is all Britney.
Do you have like your featured moment?
Mm. I'm always featured with the group of Skrull Club. So Skrull Club like moves as a unit. So my favorite is the moment that all of us, like Prince Charming appears, and then we all kind of go down the line saying his name. Well, Valiant, Charming, Faithful, and he's like everyone's prince. And in that moment, the girls like become one raging group of women, and we sing Womanizer, and that is my favorite moment.
Womanizer for so long was my wake up alarm.
That's amazing.
Just because of that intro, boom, 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 like it's a perfect wake up alarm.
That'll wake anyone up. You're like, okay.
So what iteration what stage of development is the show in right now? Like, is this the second or third out of town tryout? Like, I know it's the it's slated to hopefully go to Broadway soon. What stage are you guys in right now?
I think the next thing is going to be Broadway. I don't think there are plans to do another out of town. I think the plan was to do one out of town, and pre-pandemic it was supposed to be Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
Once we got into the pandemic, the opportunity in DC came up, so we did DC. So I don't think there's going to be another out of town.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe it's felt like there's been more steps because we've been following this for so long, just from your social media. And since so many things have changed, it's felt like multiple steps along the journey, but really just kind of different pivots.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were mostly like COVID pivots, unfortunately. And I only got involved when it came time for the first out of town. So you saw me like be ready to do an out of town and then COVID, and then finally got to do the actual out of town.
So is there any word of Brittany, like maybe showing up for any of your rehearsals coming up, or maybe she'll come to the opening night of the show on Broadway?
Oh my God. I hope so. I really hope so. It would be amazing. No word. We don't know. I know that our press team has had some trouble contacting her press team, and I'm sure with her new freedom, she just has so much she wants to do. I mean, she's engaged and all this stuff, and she's sort of still finishing things up with her. I don't know. I have no idea what's going on in her life. So, but we hope. We would love her support, and we would love for her to see it, because it is the jukebox musical part of our show. Oh, is sure. Just such an ode to her. Like, mm-hmm. We love her music, and there are moments of it that are just so concert-like in a way. Like, this story, I think the idea of Princesses was her idea. So in a way, it was born out of an idea, like a seed that she gave to the writer, and then he ran with it. And she saw a workshop a few years ago that I wasn't involved in. From what I heard, she loved it. I think I've been told the Princess and the Pea is her favorite princess and is why she's so featured. So I think it's the kind of musical she would love, and I hope she does one day, and I hope it's soon, and I hope I'm there.
And the story of her life is so much tied to, or the narrative of her life is tied to, so much to the whole idea of reclaiming the female agency and taking back your own power, and kind of mirroring what we've seen, or at least the developments in her life in the last year or so, kind of gaining her freedom.
Yeah.
Feels
her modern day princess story.
Yeah. I mean, it's her story, but the truth is it's so many of our stories. Like, it's unfortunate that we've had to see her story so publicly and be told by so many people that honestly aren't her, the New York Times, and
capitalizing.
All these other people are telling her story. So I hope one day she gets to be the one and capitalizing in a way. So I hope one day it comes from her and we get to hear her. And I know that's what the world is waiting for. But to that point, like, a lot of women, and more than just women, anyone who hasn't been able to tell their own story fully in, you know, the most vitalized version of their lives, you know, a lot of people are in that position. You know, maybe not on the platform that Britney Spears is, but a lot of people live lives where they don't get to make all their own choices, where they don't get to, you know, be the narrator of their own story. So it's, the story is, you know, we love Britney Spears. It's a musical using all of her music to tell the story, and she's a big hand in telling the story. And I hope that her person and her personality as a human in this world who's very well known has a hand in telling that story. But the story exists on its own, you know, and stands on its feet to kind of like be an engine for people who haven't been able to have a voice.
Yeah.
Beyond Britney.
Do you have an all-time favorite Britney song?
Beyond her too. It depends on the day.
Or the mood, right?
Depends on the day. Or the mood. Yeah, sometimes it's like Game Time and there's like a whole bunch of songs that she has that I'll listen to if I'm like getting
pumped. I think my favorite's Toxic.
Yeah?
Yeah. I'm like, yeah, I love Toxic. Yeah, the whole like Indian inspired like screeching at the top, and I love it.
She has so much good music. One of my other favorite songs in the show is Lucky, because it's just so pretty. It's so beautiful.
Who sings that song in the show?
The girls, the Skrull Club girls. It's kind of like the Maggie at the Ballet moment, like the moment the show opens up and is truthful for the first time about what people are actually feeling. Because you see the opening number and it's like, oh, all these princesses, here they are. And then a few scenes into the show, they sit down and their real feeling is, she's so lucky, she's a star, but she cries at night. And why is she so lonely? and then the story. Like,
I'm a circus guy myself.
That's oh, you're song. Gonna love it.
My first time seeing that, hearing that song, I saw it was some weird off the wall show in San Francisco that was like a hip hop circus. It was like this weird performance company melding like hip hop dance, like breaking and b-boy and all these things with like aerial circus stuff. It was amazing. But they basically just used like all these like songs about a circus. It was kind of silly. It was just reminding you that we're at the...
Did they use any music? Did they use any music?
It was all
from
very
Barnum?
It was all very urban, very very pop. No, it was pre Greatest Showman.
That is so funny.
The colors of my life. Oh my god. Greatest Showman.
Music.
Yeah, it was all like, well, you know, there's like a whole genre of pop music where it's like, we're crazy from the night, we're weird performers, and we're going to entertain you. Like,
I love circuses.
Kind of like the spirit of Moulin Rouge, but I hate Moulin Rouge.
Oh, what?
Moulin
really?
Rouge just it doesn't do it for me. I mean, maybe I need to see the new musical because it's probably. The new musical looks very like visually amazing and like the dancing and the costumes and the lights and everything. But I just can't get past all the hearing 60 pop songs in a row like that.
Yeah. Just when you thought musical theater was going it's kind of doing its own thing and staying at plateaued, it's going in a whole different direction now, you know, with Six and this musical coming out.
It's cool. I love the idea of like an army of women telling new stories, you know, like it's always been a character in a story written by men that feels like it's been written by men and feels like
and
it's
those
really
shows
changing.
Just feel like they have a different vibe than other traditional Broadway shows where it's a different level of fun just baked into the atmosphere where it's. Yes, it's a Broadway show, but it's really also just a kind of pop concert in a fun way of letting go and not, you know, not taking everything so seriously, but leaning more into the fun aspect of it.
I think so. I mean, Six is like 90 minutes without an intermission. So they keep it moving and they give the people what they want, which is like spectacle, women belting their faces off, choreography that's like athletic and sort of like sensational and the lighting for all three shows is I think lighting makes
my sister is a senior at San Mateo right now and she's directing Six as a mini musical for the musical theater class and so I'm excited to see how that's going to turn out. She just cast it and everything, you know.
That's so cool. I'm gonna be home.
Yeah, she just cast it.
That'll be fun.
She did
In May?
I'm going to be home and I texted Stephanie and I'm going to go talk to their their class in a couple weeks.
Oh, that's exciting. Yeah, you worked with Stephanie in Rent, right? At Hill Barn.
In Rent? Yeah, we were just teaching at the same time and then I did Rent with her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think if there's anything else.
All right.
What else?
Oh, I have one more. Now, growing up, like, did you have like a musical theater diva that was like really inspirational to you, like, or star or a musical theater person you looked up to?
Maybe not a star, but I mean, there were two musicals I was like obsessed with, and the character of the music of Hairspray. I was like, that was the first musical I was like obsessed with, and my dad got me like the CD, which was a big deal, and I knew all those lyrics. And then the first time I was obsessed with like a character and a little bit closer to like a musical theater diva was Elphaba, and being obsessed with Wicked. And I would sing both parts, Elphaba and Glinda, together. So I think that's probably the closest I came to like a diva. I don't know if I knew how to utilize all my resources to like find the people playing them. So I attach myself more to characters, I think.
Nice. All right, well, let's move into our little lightning round. We've got some quick hitters to talk to you about some theater experiences at the end of our show. Well, we already talked about your favorite diva, but Ashley, do you have an all-time dream role to play?
I don't know if it's all time, but I want to play Kathy in the last 5 years, which I feel like a lot of people want to play Kathy in the last 5 years. But
yeah, Kathy, you could totally fit with that.
I can see it. I can see it. It'll happen.
Yeah, it's that time.
Do it.
Yeah.
Make it happen.
Yeah.
And I'm still hurting. I'll do it first. Then you can be my replacement. Yeah.
Oh, that'll be great.
Okay.
Yeah, I kind of do.
You don't want to be Jamie?
Well,
it'll be on Zoom.
Yes.
Let's do it on Zoom, everyone.
That'll be great.
See you next week, Ashley.
The reunion of Ashley Chu and Noah Bender from their high school musical theater days, ready to hit the stage again. Brad Friedman is like sitting in the background.
Yes, he's writing notes.
I'm sure he'll. Yeah, if you want to say to him hi, he'll probably be listening to this podcast right now.
I know. Russell Dickinson. Oh, hi, Brad. Hi, Brad.
Shout out Happy to Brad Friedman.
Shout out to Brad Friedman.
Yeah, we got to have him on the show soon. Talk about teaching high school theater for a million, gazillion years. All right. Next question. What is your intermission routine? For you in general, do you have a special ritual, a special snack?
Seeing a show.
When seeing a show, when being in a show. This is open-ended. It could be on either end.
Oh, well, okay. When seeing a show, I am standing in the women's restroom line. When doing a show, I mean, I haven't done a show in 2 years except the one I just did. So,
and this one doesn't have an intermission.
All of intermission. No, this one does.
Oh, it does. Okay.
Yeah. And it takes me the full intermission to take my whole costume off and to pee. And it requires help from our wardrobe people. I'm like so not self-sufficient. So I'm like waiting for someone to let me out of my costume so then I can pee. And it takes 15 minutes. It takes a long time. And then I have to change my wig and stuff. So I feel like I never get intermission is the point because I'm always
break's not always a break.
So your entire intermission is just bathroom and that's it.
That's it. And I hate it. I hate it so
much.
That's
the glamorous life of
an
actor.
Of an actor or just like a woman at
these days.
True. Like there's no alternative.
They should make more restrooms. That's all I have to say.
Yeah, you would think they would have solved this problem by now.
Remember?
Yeah, right? No.
I mean, do you remember Brad's curtain speech before you're in town?
Yes.
Where he was like, Barbara Rose.
Well, no, he when we did You're in Town, it was during when there was a big drought in California. And so we had a brand new theater and they had paired with some California water initiative to build new toilets in the restroom. And so they unveiled all these like waterless toilets in the bathroom. But yeah, in his curtain speech, he made some remark where it was like, you know, in keeping with the spirit of the show, all the restrooms are now closed. Ha 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 ha.
Oh, yes. I didn't get it.
That's not how you remember
it? No, I thought he was making fun of Barbara Rosenberg, who, for context of anyone listening, is a very prominent member of the Drama Boosters, you know, parental team that gets these shows to happen. And I thought he was, like, making fun of her for peeing a lot or, you know, like, making fun of the fact that, like, women have, like, this insane line that there's always an insane line. I didn't really understand what was going on. Makes a lot more sense. Was it that the toilets weren't working or that everyone was just freaked out that there was
no
water?
They were new eco-conscious toilets that just used less water, or like they're at least for like they were the kind of urinals where you don't, there's no flush button, it just like it just goes. And finally,
I just remember him like screaming Barbara Rosenberg. Finally. Okay, move on.
and finally, Ashley, can you remember your greatest experience you've ever had at the theater?
Oh my gosh. This might be an unpopular one. Well, this is the only one that's coming to mind right now. I know there are deeper ones.
The first answer is the right answer.
But because I'm on the spot, it's not letting me get there. Okay. Did anyone see King Kong on Broadway?
No.
No, but I would have loved to have. That giant puppet.
Oh, it was so cool. It was so cool. King Kong on Broadway was so cool. So cool. And I remember trying to get my dad to see it. And my dad was like, no, I don't. I, you know, we're here in New York and you guys go see a show. I'm just going to walk around New York. Like, he wanted to be like out and about. And I remember a couple months later, I saw it before it was going to close. And I called him and I was like, you really, because I was going to buy him a ticket for King Kong. And he was like, no, I don't want to see it. And I remember calling him and being like, Dad, you missed it. And the world will never see that again, ever. Because that puppet just weighs so much money. But it was really cool. And I remember leaving
the theater. Was the music good?
I honestly don't remember. It happened so quickly. And I was just like, in awe. The puppet could move its face. I mean, it was, and it didn't feel like an animatronic, like dinosaur in Jurassic Park at Universal Studios. Like, it was alive. I mean, it was like really, there was not a single moment when I was like, that is not alive. And that was so cool. And I think the way that I describe it was like, and it was an action movie in live theater. Like, I will never see an action movie as live theater again. And it was so cool.
That's cool. Cause yeah, like that's really like emblematic of the different sides of the potential of why people love Broadway. Because, you know, I assume probably not the most memorable music or anything like that. But the reason why you came to see it was because just the ultimate advancement in stage tech and
the spectacle, seeing
the puppetry and the tech on the absolute highest level, I'm sure completely makes it worth the price of admission.
Oh my God. And it was in like one of the biggest Broadway theaters, and they unfortunately weren't selling. And so we got like the cheapest ticket. Saw this. It was amazing. Oh. I would totally go back and see it again if it was still there.
Yeah, I've always seen the like 1 minute long clips that they put on Broadway.com. It looked really cool.
But it's like,
maybe one day they can revive it and put you in it.
Oh my God. Oh, it was so cool. And
Ashley Chu is King Kong.
It's King Kong.
Oh!
There's only one moment that
I... Did King Kong get a song?
He didn't.
Does he get to sing?
No, but I think there are a couple moments where the lead girl like sang to him, and he had like a at like the exact right moment that it was like a little bit melodic, and it was just like so sad because she'd sing to him, and you know, the world is hunting King Kong, and she's like hiding away with the beast, and he was just like this like a little puppy dog. Oh
my God, I saw a great clip on TikTok this week from The Muppet Show that was like a silly vaudevillian King Kong number where like King Kong's on top of the Empire State Building and he's singing like, it's lonely at the top, or like some kind of like like vaudevillian lament.
Like a jazz number.
Yeah, yeah. And where all the people are screaming inside.
That's...
He's like dancing on a piano.
That's why King Kong failed. He didn't get his song. That's the only reason why it closed. It's because there was no song
not
for King Kong.
They should have gone in King Kong.
Yes, exactly.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Ashley, for coming on our show. We had a lovely time chatting it up with you.
Of course. Thanks for having me, you guys. And I'll be home in a few weeks.
Oh, it'd be fun to see you.
Yeah. Let's
do it. We can get some coffee.
Some coffee. Well, I was going to come home on Friday, but my boyfriend just got COVID.
So Tuesday.
Good idea. Yeah.
Well, I'll be at SMHS on the 8th, too, to talk to Stephanie.
Oh, to see. Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, I might be around.
Okay, I'll text you. It's good to know. You'll be there. Okay. Good to see you guys.
Yes. So what's the next thing we can expect from you? Do you have anything else to plug or anything? Any other news to end on?
Oh. Oh, okay. Well, yes. This is exciting. Earlier I mentioned I was in London and I saw Anne Juliet. I was in London because I was shooting my first ever movie.
Ooh.
And that will come out way later in the year, like in November. And when it comes out, you will know.
Ooh, that's exciting.
Oh, I love it. Suspenseful. Yeah. Ashley Chu, always a mysterious person.
Mystery. I'm so excited. It's going to be a fun year.
Yeah, so stay tuned. Follow Ashley on social media. We'll put all your links and everything in the description.
Yeah, and you just started a TikTok too, right?
I started.
So follow her on TikTok as well.
Oh gosh. Okay, gotta give the people what they want. I'm on TikTok.
Exactly.
Wonderful. All right. Well, we will see you next time on the Theater World podcast. Follow us on Instagram @theaterworld_readings. And hey, you know, you made it this far into the episode. Why not give us a review on iTunes? Why not just show yourself and let us know that you made it this far? We want to feel like people are really reaching and hearing this thing. So yeah, give us some feedback.
Give us some stars.
Yeah, just give us a star because we're a big star.
But we already have. We're all stars.
Yes. We're the Star I'm so Magnet happy you guys podcast. Are doing this. Yes, it's fun. We're just talking theater with all our old pals. Well, thank you.
Yeah, kudos to you guys for doing that and having me on and just, you know, being a part of the theater community right now. It's hard and it's a beautiful place to be and I'm so proud of you guys for doing this.
Aw, well, thank you, Ashley. It's been so fun having you here.
Thanks, guys. I'll talk to you soon.
All right, we'll see you next time on the Theater World podcast. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.